Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma and I'm a senior fellow at the Institute. I'm today joined by Skype with Nikolai Drahos, who is visiting research associate at the OIES to discuss the paper Prices and Crisis, LNG and Australia East Coast Gas Market, which was published by the OIES in March 2018 and was jointly authored between Nico and myself. Nikolai is based in Canberra, Australia. And this paper builds upon the September 2014 paper by the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies that identified three things: that the lack of available gas resources, together with the uncertainty of the deliverability of supply in the initial stages of developed QCLNG, would lead to projects contracting significant amounts of third-party supply, and with the resultant rise in domestic gas prices that would come because of that. Also, it was expected that gas prices would rise towards export netback levels unless governments approved gas exploration and production within their states to increase domestic gas supply. So, Nikolai, based on that, welcome to the podcast. Nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me, David.
Great. In March 2018, the paper we jointly drafted started by mentioning that the previous year in 2017, a gas crisis emerged in Australia's East Coast gas market. Can you give us an overview of this crisis?
Sure. So the trigger for the crisis was a report by the Australian energy market operator, AEMO. And this report delivered in March 2017 projected a domestic gas shortage lasting in 2019 through to 2024. And AEMO warned that this gas shortage could result in the closure of industrial customers as well as potentially blackouts. And that, at the time that AEMO delivered its report, concern about the electricity market in Australia was running high. A huge storm had swept through one of the states in the eastern gas market, South Australia, and that had resulted in a statewide blackout affecting 1.7 million people. And following that, there was a second smaller scale blackout in South Australia, and this time, critically, a gas power generation unit had not been able to be called into the market, partly due to a lack of gas. So it was in this context, I guess, that AEMO's report attracted a lot of public and media attention, given these heightened concerns about electricity supply security.
Yeah, I must admit, you know, blackouts aren't politically very good, are they? So anyway, so did domestic prices rise as a result?
Yeah, so that was kind of the second element to the East Coast gas crisis. In addition to there being a gas shortage projected, gas prices were on the rise. So historically, gas prices were maybe $3 or $4 Australian a gigajoule, $2 or $3 US an MMBTU. And during certain periods over 2016 and 2017, gas prices spiked above international prices. Contract price offers were reported as high as $20 a gigajoule, maybe $15 an MMBTU.
Wow. Okay. Well, look, tell us a little bit about East Coast Australian gas prices, you know, so we can get an overview of that. You know, how are they compared to global gas prices? You know, I think where I'm coming from is this a serious energy competitiveness issue, or is it just that East Coast Australian gas consumers have always been enjoying low gas prices, and now, in reality, they're going to have to pay prices that reflect global gas and LNG market?
Yeah, so for a very long time, Australian consumers enjoyed very low gas prices, well below international prices. But it's also, I guess it's also true that that's become an energy competitiveness issue for Australian industry and has put large industrial customers under significant pressure. So recently, some industrial customers have argued for a total reset of the eastern, the way prices are formed in the eastern gas market. So their view is that there should be a move away from LNG netback pricing, which now prevails, given that Australia is this country with abundant natural gas resources.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? You know, as you become part of the international business. Well, why don't we step back a bit and talk about the history of natural gas on the east coast of Australia? You know, the paper identifies three phases of the market: 2010 to 2016, then what, mid 2016 to mid 2017, and finally, kind of the post, the more recent years. Let's start with the first phase, 2010 to 2016. Now, what happened at that time, and how did domestic crisis react?
Yeah, so this was really the phase where the seeds for the East Coast gas crisis were sown. So over 2010 and 2011, there were final investment decisions for three LNG export projects in Queensland. Mm-hmm. Two things on these projects. First, they were much larger than the domestic market, so their export capacity was about around twice the size of domestic consumption. And secondly, these projects contracted for third party domestic producers for gas supply, and also with domestic energy retailers. And so it's that combination of these projects being very, very large compared to the domestic market, plus the active engagement with the domestic market, which ensured that they would exert this big influence on domestic gas prices. I just mentioned a couple of other quick things. Oil prices fell from around 2013, and that affected the exploration and development of new gas resources. And there were also moratoria put in place in several states in the eastern gas market, which potentially affected the development of new gas supply. So it's those kind of factors which laid the foundation for what we saw in 2016 and 2017.
That's actually very interesting, isn't it? We'll come back to the moratoria later on when we talk about kind of reservation policies and things like that. But I also think it's interesting, of course, they were contracting for third-party gas, which by definition was probably going to mean there was going to be a reaction. I think that was the thing we probably identified in the 2014 paper. So, okay, let's move on now. So that was kind of the initial stages of it. Then, of course, the plants were built. And so what happened from about mid-2016 to mid-2017?
Yeah, so this is the phase where East Coast gas prices spike, sometimes in well in excess of LNG netback levels. So part of the story there is this connection between the international price and domestic gas price, but it doesn't explain everything. So as LNG exports ramped up, one thing which happened was that there was a deterioration in competition in the domestic market. So southern states in the East Coast gas market. And traditionally, those states had been supplied from gas from the Cooper Basin in Central Australia and to some extent from Queensland, and that had helped support the competitive dynamics there. But as that was redirected for export, the competition dynamics deteriorated, and that was especially problematic in the case of the southern gas market because a large share of production there was concentrated in the hands of a single producer.
Yeah, that doesn't help, does it? Any kind of, you have that kind of production dynamics. Well, look, let's jump forward now to the mid-2017. So what happened at the end more recently?
Yeah, so from about mid-2017, prices returned to LNG netback levels and kind of stabilised there and have remained there. Roughly speaking, to date. So we argued in the paper that was a function of a couple of things. Mm-hmm. One might be the Australian government's policy response, which I know we'll talk about, but which essentially involved legislating a mechanism to restrict exports. Yeah. That mechanism was never used, but maybe changed the behaviour of LNG exporters in the East Coast gas market. And the second thing was the end of the commissioning phase of these LNG export projects. So that was a highly uncertain time for the domestic gas market. LNG producers were concentrating on ramping up their trains and perhaps less focused on supplying the domestic market. And the uncertainty that generated about future supply to demand dynamics resulted in these really high offers and prices that we saw over 2016 and 2017.
Yeah. Well, why don't you raise the issue about the Australian government's policy response? So why don't we perhaps address that now? You know, what was that? Because it sounds to me like it was almost the threat of imposing restrictions that brought the industry into line. So perhaps we can talk about now about how did the government respond, and or maybe you also talk about the moratorium on building new gas supply exploration, which of course would increase domestic supply. Can you give us your views on and how the government has responded?
Yeah, so after AEMO delivered its report in March 2017, the government legislated the Australian Domestic Gas Security Mechanism, or ADGSM. And the ADGSM allows the Australian government to restrict the exports of LNG projects in the event a domestic gas shortage is forecast for the forthcoming calendar year. So the Australian government can restrict exports when an LNG project is what is termed in net deficit. Right. That's to say it's more or less exporting more gas than it's producing. Now, that's a very simple way of putting it. So a more formal way of putting it is as follows. So an LNG project is in net deficit if the amount of gas it uses, exports plus gas used in processing, is greater than the sum of its own gas production plus purchases from third-party domestic producers that have developed their resources primarily for the purposes of export.
Yeah, I somehow sense you're quoting from an Australian government reporter, which you have to do, and I understand that completely. Don't worry that, Nicola. That's okay. That's interesting. Okay, and so that effectively brought the industry into line, didn't it? Because they realised that if there wasn't a response, then we were going to find there were going to be some sort of restrictions on export.
Yeah, so certainly after the ADGSM was legislated, we saw LNG producers announce a number of contractual commitments to domestic consumers in 4 years.
That's true. That's true. Okay. Well, look, let's go back to something I wanted to refer to earlier on and I didn't, and that is the actual issue of infrastructure. You know, and you know, I wanted to ask, you know, to what extent, you know, was the lack of infrastructure really restrictions causing some of the gas shortages and the price rises, or was it the startup of the LNG project specifically that was the problem of the domestic price rises?
Yeah, so I think it was a combination of the two. Certainly the startup of LNG exports was important, and it was set against the backdrop of a history of a failure to develop gas reserves on the East Coast over several years, and it was a combination of those two factors which drove prices up.
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll talk about potential LNG imports in a minute as a way of getting around some of the infrastructure issues. But so let's kind of talk about, kind of go back to the crisis that the AMEA referred to. And it was a crisis, you know, with blackout, as you mentioned earlier on. So, you know, how was it actually averted then?
Yeah, so following AEMO's report and the legislation of the Australian Domestic Gas Security Mechanism, mm-hmm. the Australian government and LNG exporters came to an agreement, and LNG exporters agreed to cover any projected gas shortfall by supplying the domestic market, and they also agreed to offer uncontracted gas, so spot exports, to the domestic market first before selling that gas internationally. And for those reasons, the Australian government didn't use the Australian Domestic Gas Security Mechanism, yeah. And a subsequent report found that a gas shortage was no longer projected,
which is politically far more acceptable. So, therefore, you know, do you think we're going to see this again? Are we going to see a crisis again?
So the Australian Energy Market Operator isn't forecasting a gas shortage for the domestic market until 2030 at the moment. So the outlook, I guess, appears to have improved a fair bit over the last couple of years. That said, there are still risks. One risk that we flagged in the paper was the potential underperformance of coal seam gas resources around which these LNG projects are based. Yeah. So if these resources underperform, for instance, we may see LNG exporters more reluctant to supply gas into the domestic market in order to service their international contractual obligations. Mm-hmm. But that said, we're not going to witness a massive period of structural change in the East Coast gas market with the ramp up of three LNG export projects, at least for the foreseeable future.
That's interesting. Well, of course, the ultimate threat would have been for, in addition to restricting exports, to actually have a domestic gas reservation policy. You know, do you think we'll see one implemented, or do you think that's less likely now?
Well, certainly, it's certainly true that energy policy in Australia remains a live issue. Large industrial consumers are still very concerned about where domestic gas prices are at on the East Coast. We have an election due in Australia in mid-2019. The opposition has announced that they may modify the Australian Domestic Gas Security Mechanism. So at the moment, the mechanism can only be put in place when a domestic gas shortage is projected, but the opposition said they might introduce a kind of price trigger into that mechanism. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see, I guess.
It's as we say, watch this space, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, look, we talked earlier on about LNG imports, you know, which, you know, to an observer, you know, in the United Kingdom, you know, where I am, is you know, it really is like customers in the Arctic and the Antarctic buying ice, you know. You know, what is going on here?
Yeah, so you're right. Australia looks to become the world's largest LNG exporter, but there are also these four projects to begin importing LNG. None of those projects have taken a final investment decision as yet, but it remains possible that Australia could begin importing LNG as soon as 2020. So for me, at least, that's a paradox, because my intuition tells me that a country which can produce gas for less than the world price would usually service its domestic requirements from its own domestic production. One factor which might explain that is that there is no single world price for LNG. There are these expectations that spot and short-term prices in Asia will decline, potentially below the price for which Australia is exporting LNG on oil-linked contracts from Gladstone. So that kind of price divergence is one factor. And the second factor is there's this potential for a shortfall in gas in the southern part of the East Coast gas market, where the four LNG import terminals are. And that means that the south would have to import domestic gas from the northern part of the domestic gas market.
Yeah.
And pipeline costs are very, very high between the north and south parts of the market. So that opens up the possibility that LNG imports could compete with domestic pipeline gas from the north.
But I think haven't you just hit the nail on the head, you know? Isn't it just a way of getting around the shortage of domestic gas pipeline infrastructure?
Yeah, so it's certainly true that, that has been identified as an issue. So the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission has said that that might be a barrier to new projects in the northern part of the gas market getting in and who are looking to supply southern consumers. The other issue, yeah, is just the cost of pipeline transportation currently, which has to do both with the distance and the fact that they are pipelines are kind of monopoly assets, I guess. But there are efforts underway to reduce costs.
But of course, you know, there are some, you know, very vocal anti-LNG import people. I was reading an article back in October 2018 that said, you know, quote, the market has failed and therefore a heavy-handed state-led solution is needed. You know, do you agree with that?
So my position would be a bit different. I guess I wouldn't say that the commercial activities of LNG import project proponents are something which should be stopped. That said, it's not clear that LNG imports will be a silver bullet for reducing domestic gas prices. The prices which are being quoted for LNG imports are about $9 to $12 Australian a gigajoule. That might be, I don't know, $8 or $9 an MMBTU, and that's roughly the kind of domestic prices that we're seeing at the moment. So the LNG imports might cap prices, but they might not necessarily bring them down.
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment. And actually, having a cap or a ceiling is obviously very useful, you know, in market price determination. But what about other supply? You know, elsewhere in the world, we've seen shale gas kind of appear from nowhere and become important. You know, and I've read actually some other articles about the potential for shale gas in the Northern Territories. You know, are there any other supply solutions, do you think, like that?
Yeah, so the Beetaloo Basin is the thing which is making people excited in Australia. So the Beetaloo Gas Basin has huge gas resources, estimates of maybe 200 TCF, but it could be up to double, maybe more than double that, according to companies that are currently exploring mm-hmm. the area.
Yeah.
But of course, there are issues there as well. So we know very little about the commerciality of these resources. There are long lead times to their development, mm-hmm. at least 5 years, yeah. you would have to think. So it's probably not a game changer in the short term, but there's long-term potential.
That's interesting. That's very interesting, yeah. Interesting. Well, look, why don't we...
So, David, I'd be interested to get your thoughts on whether there are any lessons or parallels between Amman and Egypt and the Australian experience.
Well, that's interesting, the interviewee asking the question of the interviewer. But, okay, I think it's good because in the paper, which, again, to repeat, you know, we published in March 2018 and is available on the OIES website, you know, we did look at external examples. And I think, we specifically looked at Oman and Egypt. Now, they're different but similar. So, you know, in Oman, you know, we had a case of rising domestic gas demand in the 2010s leading to gas shortfalls, and that they led to reductions in LNG production and exports, basically with the government capping it to be the minimum required to meet the LNG term contractual obligations. Now, the government also responded by introducing fiscal incentives in order to develop more gas reserves, which in themselves led to new reserves being discovered by BP in the Khazzan and Makaram fields, which started production. As a result of that, we started to see LNG exports increasing again. So that was one move in Oman. In Egypt, it's done slightly differently. Even though the demand story is similar, you know, with booming domestic demand for gas, together with it's really driven by its gas price subsidy policies that were constraining upstream gas exploration, this again led to a shortfall in gas supply for domestic gas. And so what happened then was the government prioritised locally produced gas to the domestic market and actually closed one of the LNG plants and partly closed the other. Now, to address this gas shortage, you know, it was interesting because Egypt constructed two floating storage and regas units, FSRUs, and in 2016, it imported 7.5 million tonnes of LNG, which was quite a turnaround from exporting a similar amount in 2010. So it was quite a remarkable turnaround for the country. Now, because of the change in the structures and incentives, in 2015, the Italian company Eni discovered the giant offshore Zohr gas field, which is an estimated 30 TCF of gas reserves, which is huge, and an expected production equivalent to about 1/5 of the current Egypt production. And amazingly, they brought on first gas very quickly in December 2017. So at that point, and of course Egypt then reversed its policy, scrapped its plans to build a third floating storage and regas import unit, and announced it was about to close one of the two existing terminals. It's amazing how FSRUs were used to meet shortfalls in the actual gas supply and gas demand. So really, in concluding, what were the lessons learned from these two countries? You know, both of them, when they needed gas, they determined that politically it's very difficult to export gas when it's needed domestically. But the trouble is also the countries, on one hand, want the gas domestically, but on the other hand, they're earning very useful, valuable export and tax revenues from the LNG exports. So I think what was interesting is how Oman only cut the gas LNG exports to the minimum contract volumes, where actually Egypt went one stage further and actually cut them altogether, apart from a few odd cargoes. And what is interesting, of course, is the way that prices, as indeed in Australia, have signalled the need for additional gas supply. So I think there's some really interesting lessons that came. And actually, it was amazing when we wrote the paper, Nikolai, the similarities that we saw between what was been happening in Australia and what we saw in Egypt and Oman. But coming back to you, I've got to have the last question, as I'm the believer, the questioner of this podcast. You know, we've covered an awful lot of subjects in the last 25 minutes or so. So really, just let some end up. I think, where's it going to end up? You know, are we going to see LNG imports? Are we going to see greater domestic gas production in the southern states? Or are just politically unacceptable gas prices going to become the norm?
Yeah, so I think domestic gas prices aren't going to return to historical levels, that's for sure. LNG imports appear to be firming as an option, although the low Australian dollar, as well as kind of high spot and short-term prices in Asia, are probably complicating the economics of the project somewhat. One of the main conclusions we drew on during the paper was that in kind of small, isolated markets, LNG exports have the potential to exert a huge influence on domestic gas prices, given that small swings in how much gas is produced and how much is exported can influence domestic gas prices. And I think that's a kind of important thing for policymakers in Australia to think about moving forward.
Nicolai, it's really interesting. Well, look, thank you so much for your time today. I have to say, as always on these podcasts, I've really enjoyed the conversation that builds upon the paper. You know, we wrote Prices and Crisis, LNG and Australia's East Coast Gas Market, that can be found on our website, www.oxfordenergy.org, where you can also find all our podcasts in the multimedia folder and other papers published by the Institute. I hope you've enjoyed, all of you, listening to this podcast, and thank you and goodbye to everyone.